It's time. Welcome in. It's the Botany Fishing and Outdoor Show here on Sports Radio 610. You know what? I just said and outdoors. I guess that's because we have so many great conversations every week about the things we love to do outdoors, from Smoke It Up every Thursday, Geared Up every Saturday, which you're going to hear today. And of course, hunting season never ends every Sunday. I'd say probably 80%, 85% of our conversations are fishing, Gulf Coast fishing, not counting the tangents we might go on occasionally, but it's awesome we get to cover it all. So let's get started. This topic here was born from a question I got, and I'm going to paraphrase most of it because it was a long question, and I didn't want to send you guys all that because I knew you wouldn't read it all. But the question was about the wildest request that the captains have ever received from a client. All right, so here's the backstory, and I'm paraphrasing. Dude went fishing. I'm guessing it was a friend, but not like a close friend that he's fished with a lot. And so he's on this captain's boat. And I forget exactly what bay system it was in. And the guy that he was fishing with, that he took fishing or whatever, told the captain, "I want to keep everything I can." Cool. So captain, whatever they catch. Then they catch, some drum, some puppy drum. Then they have some gaff top. Then they have some hard heads. Then they have mullet. I don't know how they, whether they had the mullet on the boat or found the mullet or netted the mullet or whatever. Dude kept everything. Everything. He was going to, he even kept the mullet.
I got $5 that says he was from Louisiana.
He says that's got to be the wildest thing that captain's ever heard. Yeah, I want the hard head. Yeah, I want the gaff top. Yeah, I want the mullet.
I've been a victim of this, and I'm going to say that fellow was from the Far East where communism rules. Can I say that without getting us in trouble?
Yeah, you can say that. You can say that.
You make a fish head soup.
Yeah.
They didn't want anything cleaned. They didn't want anything cleaned. We pulled the guts out, didn't skin anything, didn't fillet anything, didn't cut the heads off anything. Oh, no, this be fine. All right.
And so on, kind of in that same theme, I did. And I mean, I've never had really anything outrageous that was, I mean, I've had people from like the Midwest that are down fishing, and it's like a bait fishing trip, and we're catching hardheads, and you throw them hardheads back, and they're like, they couldn't understand why we weren't having a fish fry with all them catfish. I mean, they were, and I explained.
Well, I kind of get that though.
It's like, these ain't blue cats from the Trinity River. And that also, I mean, that led to the whole nother conversation we had a couple months back. And I said, I swear I still need to do this, because there are thousands of hardheads swarming under the cleaning table at the marina. I've got to fillet a hardhead, fry it up. I mean, everything is edible. Of course, in Florida, mullet is a delicacy. But I had a guy, man, I can't think of his name, semi-famous dude, has a show on TV. And what he did, it was, he would bring a group of people down, and they would catch. So they did hunting trips also. They went and hunted, and he taught them how to clean the fish, how to prepare it. It was a whole weekend. And he wanted the heads to make fish sauce. And that fish, in fish sauce, they ferment the head.
Yeah.
And then they siphon the juice off of that to cook with it.
Green. Caleb's turning green over
now,
there.
It was fermented fish heads made fish sauce. And I mean,
better way to describe this, Dean.
You can go to the Asian aisle, and they have fish sauce. I mean, it's a legit thing. I had
no, I use it. I've used it.
But yeah,
I didn't know how it was made.
Ferment the heads.
So y'all remember the story about the snapper in my Orion cooler? I did not realize that I had made fish sauce.
Oh yeah, siphoned the juice off of that.
Yeah, you did.
I will sign out right now.
That. You could have used that.
So Scott, I'll sign out.
No. Perry's reminded me of a buddy, Scott, that went, and this was college era, and we were catching hardheads. I told this story a little over a year ago on here, and we were catching hardheads, and somebody dared him, or he wanted to, or whatever,
to cook up the hard head. So he cleaned them, left the skin on, you know, cut the head off, cooked them. And I just said, what in the world are you doing? What does it even taste like? And he goes, ketchup. Because he just doused it all. He just covered the whole thing with ketchup. It tastes like ketchup. So, Scott, anything along those lines, wildest, you know, shake your head request. For, I mean, hey, the customer, you gotta please the customer, you know?
I had one guy, and I forgot where the hell he was from, but he wanted what he was considering a Texas Grand Slam in one day of fishing. He wanted to catch trout, red, and a flounder, of course, you know, for the slam. But he also wanted a snook and a tarpon.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, no problem. We got
Is that
this.
All? Is that
That's
all? It?
That's all you want? Shouldn't be any problem at all. I mean, you could probably pull that off if you were in Port Isabel. You might could if you really, you know, were dead set that that's, you know, a way to
that's
go.
That's all day, though, man. That is all
Oh, yeah,
that
would be an all-day trip. But I think you might could pull it off down there. Mm-hmm. But, man, that's the only place I could think of that you could maybe pull that. I don't know. Man, that would be tough. You know, Wayne might could do it out of Port Mansfield. I know he gets a few baby tarpon and some little snook every now and then and some big snook. But, yeah, that was one that did have me shaking my head. And I was in Galveston at the time, too.
Oh, Lord.
I was in Galveston.
Hey, by the way, my guy Rico Castillo from Arctic Coolers, I went and picked up a couple for the feeding frenzy. He said his son caught a tarpon in Galveston.
Yeah.
Pretty badass. Cool. That's pretty badass right there. Just this past week. Yeah, just this past week. So one more thing on this, because I like this topic. I know it's going to probably get some thoughts going for you guys. So Dean, the other day, and I hope I'm not, picking on any listener, because I think it was a listener you had on your boat. Fly fishing trip. All right. So fly fishing trip. You're already smiling. You know what I'm talking about. And Scott's probably had this. I don't know about Caleb. So they were from either the Midwest or Colorado, old school fly fishermen, you know, and they asked Dean, I'll let you finish the story, but basically they wanted to go old school, all encompassing. And they were asking you, like, when lunch is served, they wanted you to bring out a picnic table midway through the trip and, serve them lunch and then finish the fly fishing. Yeah. This isn't the banks of a creek, man.
It's in it. So I've been on those trips in the mountains and, yeah. It's really kind of a weird tradition. I was even on one in, I may have been in Durango where we were floating down the river. And so the guide that was leading the trip, they had another person who like stashed all the food on the bank ahead of us.
Okay.
And so it was like their little setup. So you're floating, you're fishing, and then you pull over, and I shit you not. They pulled out a folding table. They put a tablecloth on this thing, and then they serve little brie and little crackers. And I was like, can we guys go back to fishing? I was like, this. But and then I did another one in Crabapple Creek up in near Fredericksburg, near that big rock, near that enchanted rock. And they did the same thing. It was raining. And the dude pulls out a table. And we had some fancy little cheese and sandwiches and stuff. And so, yeah, when he called me up, he was asking about lunch and stuff. And I was kind of confused for a minute. I mean, I was like, well, it's like I can bring some tacos from the taqueria.
That's right.
And we always enjoy those in the morning.
Gotta have the tacos.
No. I explained it. We didn't do that kind of stuff. I mean, it was it's kind of awkward for a minute.
Now we're going to be asking for brie and crackers next time you go fishing with Dean. And don't forget the tacos. When's our brie and cracker break, Dean? When's our brie and cracker date break? So, Caleb, what's the weirdest request from a client that you can remember?
I had a dude ask me if I'd take a picture of his girlfriend topless. Y'all's lunch stories are cool and everything, but... Yeah. And she was Miss LSU. So anyway, brie and crackers sounds great.
No, way back in the day, I had some Europeans out there, and without even telling me, I just turned around and man, she was topless on the boat And it was kind of, it was just casual for them, you know? And I was like, okay.
Hey now.
I was not asked to take any pictures, and I was very polite and did not take pictures.
Yeah.
It was one as in Galveston, I had two old farts on the front of the boat fly fishing, and I was pulling them on the grass on the north shoreline of West Bay. And we decided we were going to run back into Greens, go back through the cut. And as I'm pulling up to Greens, one of the big cigar boats comes flying by, and they were doing one in poker runs.
Gee, I wonder if there were any girls on that boat.
Yeah, they were topless, and they were on the front, you know, bouncing down the intercoastal. I pull up there, and I look both ways, and there's like six more of those boats coming, just one after another. And so I just stopped. I said, man, guys, this is like playing Frogger. I ain't going across. Yeah, we're just waiting. One of them said, we can sit here all day. I told them, I said, yeah, it's a poker run. They run to Freeport, and they do something, and turn around and run back. It's usually some charity deal. And he goes, how long do you think it'll be before they'll be coming back? But every one of them boats had some topless girls on the front of it.
His boat was too slow to keep up with them.
Exactly. We were coming back from fishing at Houma tournament. I think we won second or third, and we knew we had the fish to do it. And I'm running Daniel Simmons that runs, I don't know, 80 with the tower and stuff on it. And in front of me is this great big V-bottom boat, like a small offshore boat. And there's three sets of neon bikinis on the back of it going about 45. And I just risked missing weigh-in, man. I rolled that Simmons about 45. You never be too safe. But y'all are welcome for getting the conversation where you really wanted it to go.
Yeah, thanks for that, Caleb. Appreciate that. All right, coming up next, let's talk flounder and the so-called flounder run next on Sports Radio 610. Welcome back with Captain Scott Null, Captain Caleb McCumber, and Captain Dean Thomas, all of whom you should always try to book because it's a lot of fun. I'm John Lopez. Let's get right back into it. So we've got another question here for you guys. Scott, I'll start with you. Because they were talking about the Louisiana regulations, which I saw a post about that today on the group page as well. And it was an interesting question, and this is right in your wheelhouse, Scott. So are the flounder regulations good now? Because a lot of people are just kind of wondering, you know, there's a big focus on it. In fact, I got an email today from CCA Texas about taking a survey on some of the things that we think are going on. Are the flounder regulations good now? Do you see anything else changing there or anywhere else? And then there was the other part that I'm sure a lot of people have thought about. The flounder run is one of the biggest reasons that we've had these regulations, as you know, Scott. Why don't other species have a similar, quote, run, you know, when it's very obvious what they're doing and where they're going?
I mean, flounder are leaving the bays to go offshore to spawn. You know, they spawn in the wintertime offshore. So that puts them in a funnel anywhere that there's an opening to the Gulf, and that made them really vulnerable, and that's why they closed it down. Because there was, if you ever went to Seawolf Park, places like that, you'd know. I mean, there were people standing shoulder to shoulder filling coolers up with flounder. It just, when a species is that vulnerable and they're that stacked, people tend to take advantage of them. Trout and reds don't necessarily do that. Redfish, you know, they gather up at the passes on incoming tides to spawn, and it's aggregate spawning, but we already have protections on bull reds. So it's not really a big deal there. Trout, they spawn all up and down the coast in coves everywhere. So they're not concentrated in the same kind of ways. And they spawn repeatedly throughout the summer.
Spring and summer. Then there's the part about you can't stab them.
The
fishing pole.
Yeah, there's that.
You don't want to be stabbing those trout.
Yeah, you know, let's get flounder and let's stack them all up on shorelines where everybody knows they are, and then turn some lights on and stick them with a pointy stick.
Yeah. All right. Well, you mentioned it. What should be done?
Well, I mean, they've done it. They've closed flounder season during that time period, which I think was a good move.
They should make flounder a game fish. I mean, honestly, flounder should be a game fish, just like speckled trout and redfish. It goes back in the history. Flounder were kind of sacrificed when redfish were made a game fish. when redfish became a game fish and they were no longer allowed to be netted because they were netted to extinction, flounder was on the table at that point, and they were given to the commercial fishermen in exchange for redfish. Okay, you guys can still go out and stab all the flounder you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that was different too, though, when that happened, we were still using lanterns and walking and digging that way. Now you've got these specialized flounder boats, and man, they are super efficient. If you go out here any night here in Port O'Connor and go sit on Stephen Plant's porch down at the end of the road, and you'll watch multiple boats going out. I mean, it's dozens of them at times on the weekends. And then you look out across there at night and there's lights all over the place.
Here's another thing. Here's what flounder guides are allowed to do. And you can get a commercial license, they can go and buy a flounder license. So they book a trip. They go out, they put four people on their boat, boom, 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 stab a limit of flounder, bring them in. Then they go back out and catch a commercial limit, which is double a recreational limit. They can do this before midnight, and then they can go after midnight and do it again. Happens all the time.
Man, I hadn't thought about that. Because that is absolutely the case. They
book a trip, they go stab their customers' flounders, then they go out on their own, stab a commercial limit, and sell that. Can legally do it before midnight and do it again after midnight. Pressure on the resource. And these flounder boats, man, these LED lights and these rigs that are out there, they're very, very efficient in what they do.
Well, we all have benefited from technology, but I don't think anyone has benefited from technology like those flounder boats.
Yeah.
I mean, the flounder
have not benefited from the technology.
Yeah, the flounder definitely have not.
If you look at it from their point of view.
I learned Matagorda by walking it and gigging it. That's where I've learned the shorelines of West Bay for sure. I don't understand why they aren't game fish. I really don't. It's literally fish in a barrel, and you know, the right times of year with a light and a gig. I said, and just like keeping a bunch of fish, I've been part of it. I've done it.
So flounder gigging at night, obviously. And here's one more for you guys here that I thought I found very interesting. This is from our listener. I think this might have been a post as well, but got a question. And Caleb, I am going to start with you on this one. The question is basically, is night fishing the future of, quote, getting away from all the boat traffic, from, you know, boats having run over a bunch of areas? And it was from a kayak fisherman and wanted to know, I think the post was a little different from the question I got, but basically the same thing, like kayak fishing at night. I'm not asking you to do too much on that, Caleb, but just night fishing when you're going out at nighttime, is that kind of the future of if you really want to get away, and some of the things that you have to do when you do go night fishing? We've talked in general terms about how it's louder and it's you know, some of the things you have to, some of the safety things you have to do, but just in terms of fishing at night, and then I'm going to ask Dean and Scott about the kayak aspect of it, but fishing at night, whether it's wading or you're drifting or you're anchored and et cetera, is that, it really, everybody talks about the full moon, but the full moon doesn't necessarily have to be a big part of it, does it?
No, the full moon doesn't matter at all. And it's not going to be a getaway if we keep talking about it, John. So
it sounds like someone who likes to fish at night.
It's still better than the daytime, but it's not what it used to be. You're not the only guy out there anymore. There's plenty of other boats out there. So there are a lot more precautions you have to take. Definitely leave the lights on your boat. Be cognizant of where you are waiting at. If you are somewhere a boat can run, there's probably going to be a boat come through there at some point that night. It's not like it used to be where there's one or two people out on the bay. Last time I was out, I think I saw six or seven other boats, and those are just the boats that I saw. Full moon, good. New moon, good. Half moon, that stuff, I don't mess with it a whole lot, mainly because fishing at night's a heck of a lot of work, and I'm getting to the age now where it takes me a long time to recover. So if I'm going to go, I'm going to go on a really good fishing moon, one or the other. It's nice to not be 100 degrees and dying out there while you're fishing. There's no doubt about it. But don't feel like you're going to go out there and be by yourself, and don't feel like if you go out there and don't take the proper precautions, you're going to be safe because there's nobody else out there, because it's not what it was 6, 8, 10 years ago.
I mean, I've done it a lot. I've had great nights. I've had bad nights. I've had just like fishing in the daytime. I've seen good stuff and bad stuff. The benefit, and it always comes up in the summer when it's 108 degrees.
That's why it came up this time, yeah.
And of course, if you want, but I sleep at night. I don't care what goes on out there at night anymore. I wish everybody well. Be careful. It's dark, and crossing those channels is risky, and consider all those things. There's places it's probably better to do it. And all of my trips, night trips, were always kayak fishing. I mean, that's what the
main question was. Like he's like, I want to do it.
And we took kayaks where we were kayaking. You know, we were in areas where no boats were going to get to us. I mean, we were back in the corners in ultra skinny water, avoiding boats in the first place. I mean, it can be good. It's a great option. It really is. I mean, I don't want to say that. I mean, but I've never found night fishing a big advantage opposed to day fishing. You're not going to go out there and just magically catch more fish because it's nighttime. There's the same rhythm to it. But then there's also the point you can't see.
Of course. Good stuff. Let's see what Scott has to say about this. Plus, let's take stock in the trout population up and down the coast. That's next here on the Bite Me Fishing Show on Sports Radio 610. Welcome back. Talking trout population and night fishing. Well, Scott, that's what I wanted to ask you about, specifically the kayak aspect of it, because I think part of this, it's intimidating. Unless you've done it a few times, it can be very intimidating to go out, whether, you know, take your kayak out and go fishing at night. You know, we've talked about the noises and the things you don't see and all that. So what would you say? I mean, like, yeah, it's intimidating, but if you can get into a certain groove, certain comfort level, it might be really, really good.
That's some of what I did in the kayaks, was just going up and down the canals, pick any of the canal home areas, and everybody's got a green light for you, and you just ease along there and cast those green lights. Be respectful. If somebody's out fishing their pier, just paddle around that one and go to another one. If they've got a boat tied up there, don't cast up against their boat and try, you know, banging lures off the boat's not cool. But you can ease through those neighborhoods and you can catch a ton of fish just fishing off their lights. And you can actually catch some pretty good ones that way. Because you're quiet and you're easing up and you throw to the outside edges of the light. That's a good way to beat the heat. When I was younger, I worked nights. You know, I worked 11 at night till 7 in the morning while I was in patrol for many, many years. And so night fishing was just normal to me. You know, I was used to being out all night. And so we did quite a bit of it. And like Dean said, it's not a magic elixir. I mean, we'd go wading on shorelines and throw top waters and do all the things that you do during the daytime. And biggest difference was everything was amplified.
Yeah.
Every splash, every noise. One thing you don't do, though, you don't set the hook too quick on a top water bite. Because by the time, you know, daytime, daytime you see it happening and you end up pulling away from them. At night, you don't know what happened most of the time until they've already got it. So that was one little bonus point to it. One of the things that bothered me some was you didn't want to turn a headlight on all that much because you don't want to blind yourself for later on. But you catch a fish and be bringing it up and you're getting the fish up near you. You don't really know what it is until you got it right there in front of you. And there was several times that we had stingrays and sharks working at night. And then you get them right up there to you, and then it's circling you, and you're like, okay, I'm going to turn my headlight on and see what I got. How big is this trout? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not a trout. Hold on. Yeah.
I've been walking down the shoreline of West Bay and shine my light, and something about whatever was going on, but every stingray in the bay had came up in about 6 inches. We were walking around floundering, and every stingray in the bay had come up in about 6 inches of water, and I bet there's 50 around me.
Craziest night trips I ever did. I had somebody talk me into going to the bridge between Portland and Corpus Christi. The Causeway boat ramp bait camp is right there at the base of the Causeway. We launched kayaks. It was windy. And he's like, oh, man, when it's windier, it's better. And we paddled down behind that bridge. And we went around on the Corpus Christi Bay side. in kayaks. And right where the channel is, where the channel cut, you would pull in there, and every cast was a beautiful trout. It was amazing, but it was one of the most death-defying things I had ever done. We'd paddle through the waves, and so there was some little bollards there that would somewhat block the waves. You get in position, boom, you had one chance to make the cast because you immediately started getting blown away. But if the cast got in the spot, boom, they were 24 plus every single cast. It was one of the craziest trouts, but survived it. I did it once and I said I would never do that again. But you couldn't have got a boat there if you wanted to. There were so many obstructions, these little concrete pilings. It would have been impossible to take a boat in there. But we took little plastic boats. It was, but I had never have the desire to ever do that again. I don't care if 28 inch trout are jumping in the kayak.
You ain't going. We were talking about the trout population, and Caleb, I'm going to start with you because you've been all up and down the coast lately with Angler U. And somebody said, "Hey, you guys are right about the trout." I said, "Yeah, we're right about the trout and the regulations and why everything's good. We're not going there." But what he asked was this, Caleb: can you ask those guys like what they've the biggest trout they've caught consistently this year versus, let's say, 5 or 6 years ago? Like, just in 5 years, what is your mental data? You know, like the biggest trout you've caught consistently in the land this year versus 5 years ago.
That's not even close.
He thought it would be a good exercise.
Yeah, it's not even remotely close. And that's not just me. That's fishing as a whole. That's talking to Pat. That's talking to Wayne Davis. That's talking to James Plogg. That's talking to people that are really into it. It's not even close. Now, little side note: some areas the trout fishing is still pretty good. You can still go catch a bunch of fish in Galveston. You can still go catch a bunch of fish down south. Other areas are hurting and slower. But as far as big trout and per capita on trips taken, it's not close.
Yeah, I mean, when I see a trout, what I've done over the years as I'm poling and I go across a deeper gut, you know, like the oil field cuts or, you know, any of the marsh drains that come out that are deeper, I would always tell my guys, "Hey, go ahead and throw that soft plastic in. We're throwing conventional. Throw it soft plastic in, let it sink a little bit as we go float across that cut, going to the other side to get on back on the flats, pulling reds." And invariably they'd catch 2, 3, 4 trout. You know, it was just normal. You know, every time we'd go across one. And now maybe one, you know, if you're lucky, and they're all small. Every one of them is, you know, 12, 13 inches. We're not getting any decent sized trout doing that. Whereas used to, you know, we'd pull out, you know, 15 to 17 inch fish. It was never really big trout, but it was consistently bigger than they are now.
You can monitor what everybody's doing from the comfort of your home because you can click on Facebook and you can look, because these dudes are going to post pictures every single day of what they catch. And I live in Croker Choker Central. And every single day when I come into the marina, I drive past one of the busiest cleaning tables in probably all of Texas. I would put Con Brown Harbor and the Navigational District for the boats that go out of there every day. And so these same dudes, no more than 5 minutes after they clean them fish, I can click on their Facebook and I can monitor what every one of them is doing every day, because they are a glutton for putting their trout. And every one of them, I watch them pull into the bait house. I mean, I know what they're doing. Ain't nobody lying to nobody. And a bunch of these guys don't fish during the rest of the year. They only fish during croaker season. And the speckled trout that they are catching are all very small. I mean, I couldn't be happier about the fact that they can only get 3 fish per person now. Those dudes are the ones that are the most responsible for
what's just happening,
abusing the resource. And so, and here's another thing. Here's another thing that when they do catch one, that's 24, 25 inches. They can't wait to take a picture of it and post it on the internet. And those pictures are few and far between. I mean, you can see what's trending on the internet. You can see what's trending on the cleaning tables. The catches of speckled trout this summer are way smaller than what they were in the past. The cool thing about the whole situation is that every trout that's over 20 inches is going back in the water now. I can't wait to see in 3 years the conversation that we're having about speckled trout. Very interested to see that barring any natural disasters between now and then, that the fact that every trout over 20 inches is going back in the water and they cannot, it took that abuse away.
It did. So what does it mean for the population moving forward and how long? That's next here on Sports Radio 610. We are back. Happy you're here with us. Caleb has a story, man. Go figure. We'll get to that. But let's put a bow on this trout discussion.
I can tell you this. I'm not going to say 5 years ago because I just did the math as you were talking. I think I took my trailer down to Sabine, up to Sabine in 2011, and I took it to Matagorda in 2016, late 2016 before Harvey, right as Harvey was hitting. Caleb, there were days when I went to Sabine where I was disappointed if I caught anything under 22 or 23. Like it was, I had it dialed in pretty well, and I was catching 22s to 28s, like as part of my plan. Like it wasn't like a surprise. Like I can't tell you the last, I mean, it's been a while. I caught about a 24, 25, but a couple of months ago. I can't tell you the last 28 I caught. And I'm not out on the water every day like you guys, but I'm out on the water a lot.
I think before the freeze, I went 7 days without catching a trout under 3 pounds. And I was fishing out of the boat. That wasn't even getting fancy. It just, the population was that good. Sometimes Mother Nature sucks. We might find out even more so on Monday.
That's why I wanted to go ahead and do this topic. I'm not even going to toss it to you guys.
Another follow up on that. It was probably Scott who called it back before this thing changed. He's like, we're going to see the pictures. We're going to see them. And it is because they can't not post pictures. And it is quite entertaining to see 9 16-inch speckled trout laid across the bow of the boat. The people standing there, and it's just not that impressive.
My favorite that's popping up now is limits by 7 a.m. Limits by 7:15 a.m. Well, yeah.
It's 3 16-inch trout.
Exactly.
You're not impressing people.
I saw one yesterday, and they laid them in a little circle. You know how they put them like head to head to head on the bow of the boat? And I was like, I would be ashamed of myself.
Is that Mercedes?
If that was your goal and you called that a success, I was like, I got 7-year-old kids on the boat throwing topwaters, catching redfish. And these people come in with 6 16-inch speckled trout. And they were that's your style of success. So,
Lord,
more power to you, man. Something for everybody. But
listen, we're not trying. This show isn't all about picking on Parkoff. All right, let's just leave him alone.
We love him. Have a good time. hey, don't sleep on Parkoff.
I wasn't reading along. Did I miss something?
He's donating like 4 or 5 or more taco trays, man, for the silent auction stuff. We're gonna get customized bite me.
I use those trays to take my lemon into the dock.
All the fillets fit in that tray.
Now that is a great line. That is a great line. Here's my limit of trout right here. I got them in the taco tray. On that note, if you do find in your deleted files the rundown, I'm going to hop around a little bit because another thing that we've been getting a lot on the group page on Facebook, Bite Me, just search that, you can find it, is these really, really, really tough bites that people are having. I experienced a little bit of that on Saturday, to a small degree. I saw a lot of fish, tons of fish, feeding, jumping, chasing bait, and my son and I only caught 4. There are always exceptions. I mean, there are people on the group page saying we caught a ton, we caught a ton, we caught a ton. But by and large, we're getting a lot of questions about, is the bite that tough right now? And Caleb, I'm going to start with you because you've been all up and down the coast. So you'll have a good perspective of just the bite in general. And why is that? Or is it just us?
It's tough. It's dang tough. We I spent days and days around schools of 10, 15, 20 fish, roll 20 yards in different school after school after school. And we had to work real hard, catch four or five of them. They're hot. They're not as energetic. They're not hunting as hard. And they when we flip in front of them, they didn't even necessarily run from it. They just kind of move around it, keep going about their thing. And then you get that little window where they wanted to eat and they had eaten. But that's the way it is. We are in the dog days. This is the time of year whenever the guys throwing meat will usually whoop on a guy throwing plastic pretty quick. That's the way it works. And that's what makes us enjoy October and November so much.
I mean, it's brutal. Just the heat. I reached into the water today to rinse my hands off, and it felt gross. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, usually you put your hands in the water, even in the summertime, it still feels pretty good, you know? It has a freshness to it or something. This just felt gross. It felt slimy and just nasty. Yeah. I saw a guy posted a deal the other day that he was in West Bay in Galveston and his boat reading was 95.3. I got a message from a listener asking me some questions about some Florida stuff that Dean and I had done. And that's about Miguel Bay in particular. And he was in Miguel yesterday and it was 93. So it's everywhere. It's all up and down.
Man,
it's hot. The water's hot. And the problem with hot water is it doesn't hold oxygen. Y'all had a little spurt of good fishing, you and Dean, the other day, but it was after that rain. You know, the rain came, energized it a little bit, cooled it off. But now we're right back to a southwest wind, and it's just a hot, dry wind, and the water's just super heated, and there's no oxygen. The fish that we were looking at today, we probably saw 100, 150 redfish today.
I haven't hit 90 degrees yet. On the temperature, but we've been 89 pretty consistent on the water temperature. So we talked about
haven't hit 90, but we're at 89.
Well,
we were hovering strong at 89.
That may as well be 90.
But I mean, I've seen a lot of others that have hit in the 90s. I mean, people post that picture on their GPS, you know, right up in the corner, the temperature. And the fish that we pick up out of the water, when you hold the fish, it is hot. I mean, the fish is just, you can feel like it came out of bath water. I mean, they're just really hot. So
I wouldn't know. I didn't get to pick any fish up today.
Dang. That's why he's picked up two shiners already.
We did talk about the a chance of some tropical weather, some rain mixing it up, and the temperature. So John happened to be down here that weekend. The night before, I had 7 inches of rain in my rain gauge here in Aransas Pass, which was pretty crazy. And we went. It rained that night. We went out the very next morning. I mean, it was just barely passing us by, and the water temperature had dropped pretty dramatically for, you know, that morning. And there was a lot of life in the water. I mean, we saw big schools of mullet that were getting blown up on. We did catch, you know, pretty decent action for a couple hours. But that was just a short-lived experience. That was one day it rained, and the heat actually rebounded to a higher level than it was before that.
But the thing about that, Scott, is the temperature, I believe, Dean, went down to like 77, 76, something like that.
Pick me. First off, I think first y'all can thank me for all the rain for being in the area, and second off, didn't affect anything. What, huh? I saw it make 400 redfish move 2 miles in an hour. What do you mean didn't affect anything? It affected the health of my lower unit. It affected my ability to drink a Shiner. I'm drinking Natty Light after all that non-effect that happened to those redfish down there, Dean.
So you, some of us were greatly affected, obviously.
By the way, I put that on the rundown that y'all ignored as well. Explain yourself, Caleb. Everybody saw the looked like a jet boat. I thought it was a jet boat. Like everything was out of your lower unit, the whole prop, everything.
And let's get that story next.